Hello, welcome to another episode of the Peloponnitis Podcast. My name is Anna.
And my name is Daniel, and we are on our fourth recording of the Peloponnitis Podcast. We've been getting a lot of good feedback and a lot of good followings in the social media world, and we're only going to be expanding from there. So we're well on our way to establishment.
We are, and you know what? One more, and we will have five.
Milestone. Milestone.
Huge.
But we're not to
I
the
think we're
point
I
yet
think
of
we
when
might
of where we're going to have any giveaway, so.
right, or a party. We might have a giant party. We haven't
Okay.
decided yet. Anyway, so we have a lot to talk about, so we're just going to get right into it.
Absolutely.
First up, apparently, actually not surprisingly, there has now a lot of pressure on the Saxo Bank riders to bring results as a result because of Contador being banned for 2 years, well, whatever, until the Vuelta.
Yeah.
Now the pressure is on the Saxo Bank riders to bring the goods.
Yes, and to be honest with you, you're going to have to have a lot of riders stepping up into positions they're not used to being in. You got a lot of domestics and lieutenants who, have only had to been Contador's trusty men, and now it's so now they got to start stepping up,
You know what though? I think that's kind of exciting because I think it's going to give a lot of those people who would only ever be like second fiddle to the
Yep.
great Contador a chance to shine, and that is kind of exciting. And I really, really hope that they do well this season
I do too.
because we know how awesome it is to see some like the domestiques and the worker bees like getting awesome results and like winning races. Oh my God, I love seeing that. It's so amazing. So this will be twice that. And also, I really like the Saxo Bank kit, so I want to see that a lot.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, that just goes to that. You hope you see them this year. I mean, unfortunately, I think the UCI is going to make an example out of that team and not continue their license just as a punishment to Rees for signing Contador when they knew that he was a potentially going to be a banned rider, which is unfair to the rest of the team. And hopefully, Vaughters has been tweeting around that his organization may go and represent the side of Saxo Bank if they do. So he was sort of toying, asking for some input on, well, should I do it or not? And you got that small segment of the population was like, something, screw them. They knew what they were getting in with Contador. And I tweeted him, I'm like, look, dude, if you represent the riders. That's who you represent. You represent the riders, not
Right.
these teams. These guys on this team had no say in them
Right.
signing Contador. And if he cares about what he does, if they take away his their license, I think he's gonna be, openly supporting them.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's very frustrating to me to see sort of innocent team riders punished for team infractions or something that their leaders do or something that one person does, so every single person is punished. And oftentimes the only people that are punished really are the riders, 'cause the support, I mean, they don't I don't I, maybe I'm wrong, but in my understanding is that they do not feel it as much as the riders do. And I think that's one of the things about the system that upsets me the most, is that there's so much collateral damage when something goes wrong.
I just hope that, since they have the license now, they give them the opportunity to earn it and
Yeah.
keep it for the next year. And, maybe, hopefully, I don't think Contador is going to appeal his CAS decision, depending on the outcome of the David Millar British Olympic Association case. I could see the outcome of that case influencing whether or not they challenge the legality to UCI of the additional punishment rule, because you're
That's
punishing that rider. So
huh, I
that's
never
where.
yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that I can see how that would set
Because
a precedent.
I think the British case, if they rule against Britain saying that the lifetime ban serves as a secondary punishment, that could be a precedence for, hey, he's being punished after he served his time. He can't earn points for his employer. So now, so then you would wonder if Contador wins the Vuelta this year, like he will. I'm already saying that now. That'll get the team enough points to have a world tour license next year, or at least a wild card.
Yep. You know what I really hope is another reason that I really want Saxo Bank to do well is because I don't want to lose another sponsor. Like, I'm afraid that if Saxo Bank sucks this year and they can't get any results, that Saxo Bank will pull out as a sponsor.
Yeah,
that's what I'm worried about. So that's another reason why I want them to do well.
Yeah, well, like I said, the talent's there. They just got to put it all together. I think, you know, they got Chris Anker-Sørensen, who can definitely put out some good rides. And then you'll have, I think they may be signing someone else who's on a continental team.
I'm not sure. I think maybe... Who else? Yeah, Nicky Sorensen, Chris Anker-Sørensen. Oh, and then Danny Navarro. So, and Nick Nguyens. Okay, Saxo Bank's riders, they're going to have to ride really well, and we hope that they do.
Yes, they will.
An interesting article that I ran across last week is that Vinokourov will ride, but he's not really going to be racing. Mm-hmm. And he's probably not going to do the Olympics either. He's really, the main reason that he came back to Astana was so that they would not lose his points.
Correct.
And not lose his the World Tour status. I just while I buy that, it's the way that they did it was very odd, especially with basically forcing, I can't remember his name, but forcing that guy to retire.
Yeah.
So they could make room for Vinokourov back on the team. It was all a little bit sketchy. But, okay, here's the thing. I gotta say, I've never been a big fan of Vinokourov. Like, I think he's kind of creepy. And he's got, like, a very, like, Eastern Bloc, you know, no emotions. He doesn't have any lips. And that, like, creeps me out.
Hey.
But I gotta say... After his incident in the Tour de France last year when he broke his femur, basically, like when they were showing those videos of him and he was like, yes, I'm going to retire. And he was basically crying, like when he was like, you know, videos, like talking to his team. I'm really sorry. I can't ride anymore. I miss you guys. He was like basically crying. I was like, okay, so Vino is not an emotionless robot. All right. Maybe he sounds kind of like a good guy.
Yeah.
And I've come to appreciate his sort of, like, really bold attacking style, where he's just like, fuck it, I'm going to go. And then he goes all out.
I know. He at least brings it, so.
He really, panache. He has panache. And I got to say, in this, hearing about this makes me like him even more. Because one of the reasons he's like, I'm going to ride, but I'm not really going to race. He's like, I'm ready to hand the baton off to the younger generation.
Yeah.
Do I want to ride until I can't get on my bike anymore? Absolutely. But seeing these other riders come up and grow and mature and have success, he's more interested in that than he is in trying to win until he's 50.
He is. And I mean, that's a really good thing because, you know, he has a wealth of experience and knowledge, you know, and I think he's not like a Lance who would stay around but not do any work for his team. You know, he's not so above going back and carrying water bottles up to, like, let's say, like, I think their new leader this year is going to be Roman Kreuziger.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be beneath him to go back and carry water bottle, you know, put himself out in a breakaway or something like that, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that's really cool. So.
Right. Yeah, and he says he's probably not going to ride in the Olympics because they have such small, like, because Kazakhstan is really not very big. So yeah, there aren't a lot of openings. Yeah. Kazakhstan only has 2 spots. So he's like, I don't want to take the spot of a younger rider who might have a better chance and who can really use this opportunity. So I was like, you know what? Chapeau, Vino.
Exactly.
You have definitely earned some points in my book for that.
Oh, game. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. So.
All right, next. It came out. So, CPA, the riders union, I guess.
Yeah, some riders association.
They're supposed to be a union for the riders, but they don't really have a lot of teeth, and they don't really have a ton of power.
Yeah.
But they have finally decided to come out and defend Johanna Fredo. And sort of how that whole thing was treated, and especially with the UCI sort of, you know...
being the UCI.
Right. And from my understanding of the article, it's not that CPA was like, you should not have banned him. It was more like this process, this whole whereabouts system, and the penalties that go along with it, they really need to be reexamined. Like, the whole system just isn't right. This whole whereabouts setup is not working for us, and we need to talk about maybe doing something to change that.
Yeah, and I mean, they're basically going on a lot of the same things that we were talking about last week. You know, what good does this do? You know, it doesn't help. I don't think it really helps anyone. I think it's the whole going too far in one area of the pendulum that, you know, they've gone so far in enforcement now that they're really over-penalizing people for minor infractions and everything else. So
right. Yeah, and that's basically what they're saying. They're like, you realize what a 1-year to 2-year ban can do to a rider, especially a young rider, right? And it's not like those things shouldn't be... I kind of understand the rationale behind it, which is to make this whereabouts system so important as to say, you know, if you have 3 missed tests, we're basically going to assume that you're doping.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they put this in place, that absolutely was kind of the thing. Like, people were avoiding their tests so they could dope. But at this point, I think doping has shifted to something else. Like, it's just not as effective as it used to be. And it's can ruin careers.
Yeah. And I mean, whenever you get, I think too, as you know, in my job and studying the stuff in college, you know, the old adage of it's better to let one guilty person go than, or better to let like a lot of guilty people go than to potentially hurt one innocent person. Whenever you hurt an innocent person or somebody who shouldn't be punished, then I mean, you always have to give people the benefit of the doubt. And unfortunately now, when a rider's accused, they're basically guilty until proven innocent. Anytime the burden is on a rider to prove something, the burden's on them. And hopefully more people recognize that. You know, and Klubnev, which we'll talk about in a little while, or maybe just touch on it, is that he pulled off a mayor vehicle in front of the CAS. I can never remember a rider who was able to defend themselves against a doping charge. So until the whole rules change, you know, you'll get more cases like Ferrero getting these massive penalties, which don't really help, I think. It doesn't send a message to riders to update their whereabouts if it's not their fault or if it's an accident, you know, so.
Right. I think they still need to have some sort of a system to kind of keep track of where their riders are, but I think they need to reevaluate the importance they put on it in terms of the penalties and the punishments for missing or whatnot. So, speaking of Klubnev, he was formally acquitted today
by CAS.
Mm-hmm. For doping. And to be honest, I didn't really know anything about this case except for what I read online. But it sounds, I don't know, what are your reactions to it?
I think with the Klubnev decision, it's hard to say because I didn't really follow it much. It was one of those things where he had a substance to where he shouldn't have, but I think the rationale from the Russian Federation didn't really use the medical defense as much, and I think that's why a lot of people were skeptical of it. So I think, I mean, they were able to prove that it was an actual medical reason.
Right. From what I understood, it was sort of the Russian Federation was like, oh, you said you didn't dope? Okay, yeah, we believe you.
No.
Here's a fine. But then when they brought it up to CAS, or when UCI appealed it to CAS or whatever, that he actually had, it turns out, I mean, he genuinely did have a valid excuse and was able to prove all of that. And I think that that's kind of a cool thing to show to riders, that yes, you can prove it. But I think the difference in Kolobnev's case is that he had a very clear cut, like, there was no shades of gray.
Correct.
Like, they could prove every step of the way, this is what happened.
Yeah.
I've had this illness for 15 years. The doctor told me to do this, so I went and bought it. That was contaminated. You can test the pills. They did that. Okay, there you go. Whereas opposed to someone like, you know, Zirbel, who fails a test, and he's like, oh my God, it must have come from supplements, because I certainly didn't dope. But he has no way to prove that.
Yeah.
You know, because the burden of proof is on him.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets banned because he can't produce the pills that he was taking that were probably contaminated.
And that just goes to show, you know, the absolute bullshit of the contamination stuff is that it does occur, but when you put the burden on the accused, you know, it's a no-win situation. Proving that something didn't happen is nearly impossible. So, but no, it does says a very good sign, and maybe, of course, the UCI is going to appeal anything no matter what. So, you know, it's a little vote of confidence for them. So,
I'm happy for Kolobnev. Although the problem is now he has no one to ride with.
Maybe, hopefully, Saxo Bank will sign him. Hell.
Have they talked about that, or are you just speculating?
I'm just speculating.
Yeah, because Katusha dropped him, and now they have a full roster.
Yep.
So, man, I mean, why doesn't Katusha, you know, why can't they have someone conveniently retire so he can come back on?
Yeah.
So, all right. So, that wraps up our news. Mm-hmm. Now let's get on to some racing.
Yeah.
Just very briefly, I want to touch on the Umlauf. There's an article that came to my attention, was that Van Mark said he could win Umlauf, and he did. Like, it was kind of a, because, you know, they had the team meeting, and they're like, all right, Hausler's our man, you know, he's the protected rider. He comes out, and he's like, wait a minute, I know I can win this.
Give me the
I'm
chance.
I'm a little bit pissed that it's Hausler. Like, give me a chance, right? And so his agent basically said that to Vodders, and Vodders was like, all right, if he can stand up in front of the team and say, I can win this, please make me your protected rider, then we'll do it. And he did it, and
yeah,
he
did.
And I was like, what?
That's pretty awesome.
I don't know. It really is. I just think that's, wow, what? He's got a lot of balls, like, to be able to be like, and to, you know, to be able to
back it up.
I guess he didn't actually go to Vodders, his agent
did.
But still, like, and how many people, every time you come into a race, people are like, I'm going to win. I'm going to win. Mm-hmm. No, I know I can win. I've got the legs. And then, but only one person can win. So, like, how awesome is it? Especially someone who's kind of a, you know, no offense to him, but he's kind of a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I can win. They're like, all right, you can try. We'll take a risk on you. You haven't, you know, you're kind of a little bit of a, you're a newbie, but we're going to do it. And then he comes out and wins. I don't know. I find that really awesome.
It is. It is awesome, and that's a good credit to Garmin too, that they'll say, hey, all right, go for it. So, yeah. So that was a very good story coming out of Omloop. And then the following day, we had Kroon Brussels Kroon, the classic sprint finish.
Yeah.
You know, Cavendish goes in there the favorite. I know Team Sky put all their credit or all their efforts behind him, and you know he does what he always does and wins. So
it was sort of definitely the polar opposite of Umloop. If Umloop was like, I was like jumping on my bed, like freaking out, you know, the last 100 meters.
Yep.
With KBK, it was just sort of like, meh.
Just watching the sprint. Just watch the sprint. And I mean. You know, there's a whole bunch of things came out. You know, Greipel was frustrated. Renshaw was. Farrar, you know, he went in a breakaway. But, I mean, if Sky rides like that during the classic season, they're going to have a very good classic season. But yeah. I think it goes to show that they can only protect one rider, you know. So they're going to have to make a – so if they can figure it out, you know, the whole team was working for Cavendish.
Now,
there was no one.
Let's be fair because – first of all, Wiggins wasn't there.
Nope.
And second of all, this is a much different style of racing.
Absolutely.
Than like, even a week long race.
Sure.
So, who knows? I don't think you can judge that at this point. But it definitely.
It goes to show when you put all your efforts behind one rider with the talent that Sky has, they will definitely control the race, you know? So.
I was really just not very excited about this race, and I love Cav.
Yeah.
But it just seemed a little off. It just doesn't seem right to say that, oh, Cav, you know, won a classics race, you know? Even though.
Yeah, but.
But like you, I mean, I guess you told me, you said, mentioned before that Kroon Brussels Kroon is usually won by.
In a sprint,
so like a bunch sprint. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's not like, oh my God, they ruined the race. But it just doesn't seem right to see have like a giant lead out train for the entirety of a classics race. Any race, you know, where there's lots of cobbles and hills and just doesn't seem right. And here's something that really surprised me. I was listening to the Velocast and they were talking about this and they were surprisingly happy with this result. I thought for sure that if anybody was going to get riled up over Cab and the Skytrain winning, it would be like the Velocast. But they were like, ah, sure, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
So, I don't know. People, I expected there to be more outrage by, oh my God, Cab winning, you know, a classic race. But
yeah, it's a classic, but.
I'm starting to get the impression that Kroon Brussels Kroon is sort of low on the totem pole
when it comes
to classic
races.
It's
definitely low. Yeah. Umloop, in my opinion, is definitely more of a priority. But since we're on sprinters and races, we're going to go to Langkawi.
Yes.
Another, in that race, another young sprinter, Andrea Garradini. I marked this guy last year as another big up-and-comer sprint talent. He hasn't really raced against Cavendish yet, but he's going to be a force to be reckoned with soon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he won three stages in a row.
Yep. And, I mean, even last year, he won in Oman and Qatar. So, and he's going to be riding the Giro this year. So he's going to have some opportunities to really make his a name known. So.
Right. And you won't miss him because he'll be wearing the fluorescent yellow of Farnese Beanie.
Yeah.
Zabriskie, who was in.
Yes. You have Dave, just like you were saying, he started out in the La Eaters jersey, and well, I think you can explain there. You had a very good term for it.
Yeah, he lost in spectacular fashion on stage 5.
Yeah, that was incredible. If you're going to crash, you crash all the way.
Right. He was like, he came in, he was 19 minutes behind the winner of the day. But in his defense, they're saying he was ill.
Yep.
Yes, he had a fever. So, but still, it was just like, he went from like first to like last in the course of a day. So I was like, all right, there you go.
Bye.
If you're going to go all out.
Yep. And I mean, that race still has like three more stages left.
Stages,
So, I
yeah.
mean, you know, it'll be something we'll definitely cover next week. So, I mean, it'll be interesting if and anything goes on, because I think there's two teammates right now that are, you know, one and two. So, unless one of them crashes and burns, you know, that team will probably win. So.
Yeah. It's Jose Serpa is in front of Jose Rujano.
Yeah.
So. By 30 seconds, so you're right. So that's really the only interesting thing that's going on now in terms of racing. And to be honest, I have not been paying any attention at all to Langkawi, because, I mean, there's no live feed, and I just... Although it has... Just from reading some of the late race reports, I mean, it seems like it's actually kind of an interesting race, because there's been a lot of, like, tight finishes, and, you know, so it's, you know... But it's not on TV, so I have a hard time caring about it. but another race that is coming up this weekend that will be on TV is a Strada Bianche, because it's going to be televised this year, and it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, you got a really good group of riders going there this year, so.
Oh, God,
and you also got Nibali.
I know. And Sagan, Liquigas. Yep. I'm calling it right now. I'm going to call Liquigas. Someone from their team winning.
I could see, it depends on how it plays out. Sagan, he's having a good year so far. So we'll see.
He's the wonder kid.
Yeah, but at least when we talk about this race next week, it'll be we can say that we watched it live, or at least the replay live, to give a little better analysis.
No, they're like showing the whole thing live. Like, you can watch it online.
Well, I mean, I'll have to watch it, the replay.
Oh, you,
know, you
will. Okay, got it.
Like,
I see. The whole work thing.
Yeah, damn work.
Yes, and the interesting thing about this race is that it's not an old race at all, but it feels like a really old race.
Well, I think because a lot of good riders go there and put a big priority onto it, you know.
Right, and I think a lot of it has to do with sort of the route that they're taking. It really harkens back to the days of yore, you know, the type of racing that they were doing back in the day, you know, on the gravel roads. Podium Cafe actually had a really interesting article, just sort of like, why is the Strade Bianche considered an old race, like a classic, when it's only been around for like less than 10 years. Actually, I don't know how many years it's been around, but very few years. It's going to be, I'm really excited to watch it. Gilbert won it last year. And see, this is what I see happen this happens all the time to those riders who, like, do really, really awesome, and then all of a sudden they're like the shit, and they're focusing on races, and they want to win this and win that and whatever, and then they just kind of like, oh, their legs aren't there all the time. The same thing, like, Cancellara, I mean, the same thing happened with him. It's just a little bit...
People just learned how to race against Cancellara. He is still powerful, but when other people... Like, it's sort of like in 2009 when he rode away. The only rider who didn't give up was Tom Boonen. Everyone else just said, oh, well, there he goes. Boonen was the only one who...
But I'm just saying, even, you know, like, they start targeting races, and then, you know, they you know, oh, I'm not in form yet. I don't have the legs yet. I'm going to peak later.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just like, meh. Anyway, so their BMC is really taking, they're saying, okay, Gilbert, probably not, but look at Balan. He's probably going to be awesome. You know, focus on him instead.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Balan is a very good classics rider. He has podiumed in both Roubaix and I think full Flanders too, so.
Well, I mean...
If they play their cards right, if they're the super team of the classics, then yeah.
Right. Well, and you have Balan, Evans, Pinotti, Van Avermaet, like all of them, like they have a really strong, BMC is bringing a really strong team. So, however, they brought a really strong team to Unloop, and look what happened there.
Yeah.
So you have Sagan and Nibali, and then Visconti, and then Iguiski, who won 2 years ago, maybe. And then a little somebody named Cancellara, who maybe you've heard of before, he's also going to be there. So there's a lot of, like, really big names, and it's going to be pretty, pretty awesome. The other race that's starting this weekend is Paris-Nice, and we'll just talk about that very briefly. I mean, we have a whole, a week and a half to talk about that. So the biggest thing for Paris-Nice is that they're bringing back the Koldez TT at the end.
Yeah.
Which I was saying earlier, like, I kind of like, I'm not a big fan of TTs, like, they're really boring to watch, but I do kind of like the mountain TTs, because it's like, okay, time trials are, like, the worst thing. They're like, right, yep. They're torture. Like, just the whole idea of them is torture, right? And then you add another element of having to climb during that whole thing. So it's like torture on top of torture. Like,
climbing,
If I was a racer, and I would just be fuck
it. Does suck.
I was like, I'm done. I'm not even signing up for this race.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see who's in the lead by this time next week going in. Is that guy a good climber more than a good time trialer?
Yeah, right. Well, and, you know, they were saying that it's kind of a big deal. I mean, it's been in the race for, you know, 17 some odd years, and they took it out last year. And it's generally the deciding factor, which is not surprising. Even though I don't love races that are sort of decided by a TT, this is different, though, because it's TTing and it's climbing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes, I'm excited. A lot of good racing this weekend that's going to be going on. And I think that's it, unless you have anything else.
Not for right now. I think we hit a lot of good things that we can also carry into next week. I think by next week we'll also know the fate of Saxo Bank. So that's going to be the big deal. And then I'll also probably talk a little more about the Rasmussen case next week, too. I want to do a little more digging into the UCI naming the Danish Olympic Committee as defendants in that case, too. So, you know, that'll be another one of my rants. So if that's all we got, then I'm Daniel at Dan Kalbacher on Twitter.
And I'm Anna at Blooming Cyclist. Also follow us, our Pelotonitis podcast, on Twitter as well. And I think that's it for this week.
All right. Thank you.